Welcome, welcome to the show. And you have joined me, Tracy Brown, here at the Brownstone. And as always, I'm always excited, but I am super excited today because so often we want to give back to our community and we just don't know how to do that. Many of us want to start a nonprofit organization, but we just don't know how to, or we're in a nonprofit organization and we trying to seek funds. You know, can we do this? Can we do that? It's just a whole bunch of conversation around starting a nonprofit, having a nonprofit, finding funding, and then finding that person that will work with you, that will teach you and guide you along the way. So I am excited to have Sherique Wilkes here today of Affinity Consulting Group. But guess what? We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back after this commercial.
Starting a nonprofit is an exciting experience. It gives you an opportunity to turn your passion for giving and serving others into a reality. However, starting a nonprofit also comes with a lot of challenges. Many organizations fail before they launch by not knowing how to set up their organization correctly. Don't get frustrated trying to navigate through the IRS tax-exempt paperwork to start a nonprofit, register your charitable organization, or even if your status has been revoked. Let our professional staff do the work for you. We are helping nonprofits run like for-profits. Schedule your discovery call today by visiting our website at thenonprofitcoach.org or by calling 240-547-8780.
Welcome back to the show, and you have joined me here at the Brownstone, you know, where there's something for everybody. But today I am excited, as I mentioned before we went on break, to have Sherique Wilkes in the Brownstone. So I have to bring her in and see how she likes my favorite room. Now, you guys know my favorite room is the library, and you know, with her background and the things that she's doing, I think she might like the library too. So Sherique, are you there?
I am. How are you doing this morning?
I am fine. I am so excited that you joined me in my favorite place, the library, because I just love to read. I just can't help but to continue educating myself. I mean, I just love stories. I love everything. But I have something to ask you because, you know, my audience knows that I have been known to be, you know, the Facebook person that just kind of go look. But I wanted to ask you, what does your name mean?
I actually do not know what my name means. I have never looked it up. I know that it's French. I do know that. And believe it or not, my mother names me after a woman she met in college at FAMU. And that's how I got my name.
That's how you got your name. Well, it's a beautiful name. I would like to tell you that.
Thank you.
But I noticed the thing that you said. You say connect, serve, and guidance. What does that mean to you?
So for me, in terms of my personal mission and purpose on this earth, I am a connector. I love to serve others, and I enjoy providing guidance on a variety of topics, some of which I'm a little bit more of an expert in than others, but I am a lifelong learner, and I love to read. I love to take classes and do professional development. I love to learn from others and travel the world and learn from different types of people from all walks of life. So my goal is always to share information and give guidance to people. I am not a, I don't hog information. I freely give it because I feel like it comes back to me. So those are the three words that resonate with who I am as a person.
Wow. And that's great. I mean, I've seen that. I was like, okay, I have to ask her connect, serve, and guidance, because all of that to me means community. I'm a big community person. I'm a type of person that loves to give back and also loves to share, because why hold on to it? We all can grow together. But I think I read something on your page. Are you publishing your first book or your second book, or what's that all about?
I am going to publish a book this year. I am under contract with CRC Press, which is a subsidiary of Taylor & Francis. They primarily basically create textbooks and reference books, and so they have contracted with myself and one of my business partners to draft a grant writing and grants management book for public safety officials, which includes police, fire, and EMS. So that book will be published next fall, and then simultaneously, I am working on a self-published book for myself, which is where I am going to basically give the community all of the secrets that consultants have in terms of being able to find grant funding available to them. So I am going to pour out everything that I know and put it into a book and subsequently have training classes after that if needed, and basically give away the keys. I want people to learn the stuff that I know. It will help better the community, and I feel it's time to share and get that information out there.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to be your first client. I'm going to be the first
Okay,
one. So put me
that
down.
sounds good.
Put me down for the pre-sale, because I truly believe in that. And a lot where we have in common is I actually have a company called the Startup Strategist, and I help nonprofits get started. So I help them build, lay the foundation, and it sounds like Affinity Consulting Group will help them go to the next step. So that's why I really wanted to have this conversation with you today, because it's just so much out there that they don't know. People don't know when they get ready to start a nonprofit organization, or even when they're there. It's like they lay the foundation and then they get lost. It's
Yes.
like, what am I going to do now? What's next? How do I get from here? All they know, they want to serve. They forget the part that you still have to do that administrative stuff. You still have to be able to provide for those programs once the grant money leaves. Or even if you don't have any grant money, you got to figure out how you're going to do, what you're going to do, what you set out for your mission. So that's where your consulting business comes into play. But guess what? We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about that.
Pressure, heartache, so much pain.
Yeah.
I've been broken in two pieces, maybe more. Hey. And some nights I made my bed right on the floor.
Woo.
The enemy really tried to take me out. Hey. Hit me with his best shot, knocked me down.
Hey. Come on. Come on.
But I'm still standing after all I've been through.
Yes, sir.
I survived it all, and it's because of you.
Welcome back to the show, and I am excited because we are getting some tips, some secrets about nonprofit grant writing, about what's going on, where to find the money, where to look to. And I'm quite sure that Sharique's not going to give us all of the information, but she's going to give us some, just a little tidbit. So tell us what it is that you do, because you mentioned to me that you were a certified grant professional. What does that entail? What does that mean for me, the average person?
So for the average person, I started Affinity Consulting Group to essentially, my tagline is to rewrite future generations and help the community. And what I mean by that is I have a background in the public sector working for government entities. I have worked with nonprofits as well as private sector entities as well. But the biggest thing in terms of building synergy between all of the entities is that there's community and people involved. And so one of the reasons for me starting this company, I felt it was a way for me to help effectuate change outside of my full-time job at the time. And so I created Affinity Consulting Group. I did this while I was the grants administrator for the city of Jacksonville. And then I left and went to become the grant specialist at the city of Tampa. And so I basically created centralized offices for both of those large cities here in Florida, and consulted on the side with nonprofits or entities that I didn't work with on a day-to-day basis. So during that time period, I went ahead and got my credentials as a grants professional from the Grants Professionals Association, which is a national professional organization. And then I have also become a certified contract manager through the state of Florida, which means that I know the entire life cycles for both of those processes, for grants and contracts. And what that means is I can take you from ideation or a concept all the way to the end, to close out and through an audit. So I know how to do all phases of grants and contracts. So acquiring them and then also managing them with fidelity.
And you know, that's important because a lot of times that's where we get tripped up. After we have the grant, we don't know how to properly manage the grant. Some of us, let's put it like this, may
yes.
think that they can spend the money on whatever, and no, the guidelines tells us what we're supposed to spend it on, how it's supposed to look. When they come out to do the audit, I mean, it's just all type of criteria because the grant also goes in with the contract. So can you tell us a little bit about how those two things connect?
They are connected from beginning to end, and I think that that's a step that a lot of people miss. It's important to probably research or Google the full grants life cycle or the full contract cycle, and you can see how it is one continuous cycle that impacts all phases of the process. So when it comes to a grant or contract, you have typically what is your pre-award side, which is where you're coming up with your idea, you're putting a plan in place for how you're going to implement the idea, and then you are seeking funding or through a grant or contract, and then you are writing a proposal for a grant or contract. And so that's basically what we call grant or contract acquisition. And essentially, you're taking all this necessary steps to be able to convince a funder that they should fund your project or your program. And so that's a vital component. And what you put in the proposal and on your application impacts what happens during the management side of it. And so it's very important that you write things that your agency is capable of completing and then make sure that you do that work should the funder give you money. And that's quite important. So once you get your grant or contract, essentially you go into the management side of it. And I like to call it project management as well because they're very similar. You are managing those funds. You are making sure that your program gets implemented. You're making sure that you have the staff to implement that program. And you're making sure that you're spending the money on the things that were approved by the funder, and then also that you're spending it in a timely manner because no one wants to give money back to a funder because you couldn't spend all of it. So you have to do all of that. There's a lot of reporting that goes into managing grants and contracts because the funder expects to know how you spent their money, on what, and how is it benefiting the clients or the participants of your program. So you have to report that information back. And then you have to make sure that your files are in order just in case you're audited. So if an auditor comes to your organization or the funder sends down a program officer, you want to make sure that all of your files are in order and you can give them everything down to a receipt for purchasing, I don't know, food for an event. But you want to make sure that everything is there and that your grant program or project has run smoothly, you've spent your funds, and you've spent it on the appropriate things.
That is so correct. And before, and it's so funny that, not funny, but you're writing your book about the public safety part because for 30 years, that's what I did. I was the budget and grant manager for a public safety agency. And so public safety to me is totally different than the normal social services. Public safety is a whole different type of environment. And just listening to you say that, it's so important that when they write their grant or while they're thinking about the process that you have these performance measures, that you're able to measure what you say you were going to do. And a lot of times they don't think that. They don't understand how important the performance measures are.
Which is why the Oh, sure. What I was going to say is that's why it's important during the pre-planning process before you actually seek funds that you work through those steps logically and that you put a plan in place and document what you want your performance measures to be so that you can document your success. But all of that should be done up front and not during the time period of, hey, here's a grant that I saw, let's go apply.
Wow. You just said a mouthful because a lot of times that's when they do it. Let's just keep it real and keep it honest. They do it at the time when they are ready to put the grant together, and then they have to, you know, a lot of times the window for the grant, by the time many of us locate the grant, or, you know, through the methods of locating a grant, sometimes the due date is within 30 days. Or it's within maybe 10 days, just depending on how you do it. So I always like to tell people that you need to have your stuff in order before. You need to have the performance measures. You need to know what type of people you need. You need to have some idea about your budget. You need to have all those things in place so that when the opportunity comes up that you're able to seize that moment, meaning that you're able to move forth in it at that time and not going around trying to figure all of this stuff out at that moment. So when you begin to work with a client, well, let me back up for a minute. Has the grantor, what do grantors look for when they look at nonprofit organization? What are some of the things that they look for?
Grantors, it will depend on the type of grantor, such as if it's a government entity versus a foundation or a local business, for instance. It really depends on what their mission is. I think that that's important, is to make sure that when you're identifying potential grantors or funders, you make sure that your organization provides a service or a program that matches the identity or the mission and vision of that particular grantor or funder. That's really important. For instance, if you provide youth services and you're applying to a grantor that primarily serves seniors, that's really not a good fit. So it wouldn't make sense to spend the time and the effort applying for a grant if your program doesn't match what they're looking for. So grantors tend to look for a variety of things. At the government level, a lot of it is focused on performance and compliance at this point. The U.S. Office of Management and Budget recently in 2014 released what is called the Uniform Guidance. That document is essentially the Bible for how grants are managed for federal grants, and it is also applicable to state and local governments to some degree. But reading through that document, you get to learn exactly some of the things that grantors are looking for. You will see a lot of stuff dealing with performance, making sure that you meet payment milestones, making sure that you have certain documentation about your organization in order, such as you need to have a DUNS number. They are primarily looking for performance and compliance. And what that means is your nonprofit entity, again, needs to have performance measures that are SMART measures that you can measure and actually implement. And you need to document things such as like how many people you served. That's a simple performance measure to track. They want you to report that information back to them. They're also looking at your financial credibility. Believe it or not, during the application phase for federal grants, they have a team of grant reviewers who take a look at your application, and there are a couple of application questions that ask you to turn in like a financial feasibility or financial risk assessment. You have to fill that out. You have to let them know, have you been audited before? If you were audited, did you have any findings on your audit, which means did you have any adverse findings that a CPA firm found related to your finances? They will take all of that into account in approving your award. So it's important that you have your administrative or organizational files intact, that you have your financials audited by a CPA, you have to sign up for some numbers, such as a DUNS number. They want to make sure that you're registered in with a DUNS number and for SAMHSA. So that's important. And then they want to make sure that you have the capacity to manage that grant. How many staff members do you have on hand? What are their credentials and their background? They will ask you for their resumes as a part of the application. Again, they will Google your agency. If they see anything in a newspaper, that can have an adverse impact. I have actually had that happen working for the government. Certain projects that we were seeking funding for, they did not get funded because the grant reviewers Googled the city. And they saw, you know, that there wasn't a lot of community support for a project. Or they looked at our audit for the city and found that we had findings on our audit reports. And so we were denied funding because of that. And a government entity such as the federal government, they will tell you that. They always have a debriefing with you if you request it, and they will tell you your strengths and weaknesses with the application.
Right. I am, you know what, listening audience, I am like taking notes. I am just thoroughly enjoying this conversation because it is right down my line. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Every 30 minutes, another innocent person is killed due to a drunk driver.
My best friend.
My brother.
My poor grandchild.
My sister.
My father.
My husband.
My mom. My mommy.
Afraid of changing, 'cause I've built my life around you.
Stop these tragedies before they happen. Don't drink and drive.
OMG, OMG, and OMG. We are just being blessed today by all this information. And this is just a little bit, because it's just the nonprofit grant world, like I say, it's just so much money out there, but we have to have our stuff in order. We have to have our books right. We have to have our staffing right. We even have to have to make sure that we're able to sustain a program once the financial money goes away, once the grant goes away. Are you able to continue that program? And a lot of times, some funders may ask for in-kind. Some funders may ask for matching. Are you able to provide that? Do you even know what that is? A lot of times, that's why I like to talk to the nonprofits that I work with. Are you grant ready? Because they think they're grant ready.
Yes.
They truly think that they're grant. They think that they're grant ready, but they don't have half the stuff in order. They don't have half the things in order that they need to do. Because if you have a program, your program doesn't change. It may grow, but your performance measures and all those things that you need to have, your staffing, all that thing is consistent. So you're able to add to or take apart. But a lot of times they don't even have the program piece together. So when a nonprofit is looking to put a program together, what if they don't already have it in mind? Let's say that their slate is they don't have it in mind. They don't know what.
Okay.
What advice would you give them?
For a nonprofit that wants to put something together, I believe in planning. Failing to plan is planning to fail, as the quote says. Nonprofits need to start the process in terms of making sure that they have a strategic plan in place for their organization, and your programs should flow or be created because of the strategic plan for your nonprofit organization. What is your identity? Who are you? Who do you serve? What types of services are you going to provide to the community? And from there, you should be able to create your programs or projects. Now, when starting your programs or projects, I love to use a simple one-page tool. It's free. There's information out there on the internet, and I suggest that everyone start planning their program using the tool. But one of the tools I love to use is called a logic model. The logic model is a simple one-page visionary tool on the page, and it should be able to explain your program. It explains what the goal of your program is. It explains who you serve. it explains your assumptions about the program. For instance, why are you creating the program? Is there a gap in service in your community? And if so, why does that gap exist? What research did you do to substantiate that gap in service? Or are you going off of personal observations, or did you conduct a survey or a focus group or market research? You can put all of that on one page on this logic model. It asks you to list the resources that you're going to need to implement your program. It also has other sections on there where you list what your outcomes are and your performance measures. And all of that you put on one page in a snapshot, and someone, a funder or someone else coming into your organization, should be able to see what that program is about without having to read through maybe a 15 or 20 page document about the program. And so that's a simple tool that nonprofits can start with. I suggest getting in a room with some of your staff or volunteers and work through it together and brainstorm and logistically think out how your program is going to operate.
Wow. And that's the simpler thing, because it's like the one-page business plan. A funder or a bank should be able to just look at that and get the general gist or understanding whether or not they want to fund it or not fund it. And once you're able to do that, it's also like the five-minute elevator speech. So if you can run down this everything right there, then you ought to be, you know, you have a likelihood of being funded. But if you can't fill in those blanks, then you're not ready.
Yes, you're not ready, and I would say that's when you need to certainly go through the steps of documenting the information out in more detail, which then becomes what's called your program design or your program plan. And through the documentation in detail, a lot of those components that you're drafting are the components that you're going to be using when you write a grant application.
That is so. What are some of the myths that people that have nonprofits go, you know, what are some of the myths out there?
I think one of the largest myths that I have tried to dispel for everyone lately, I have been in the business over 10 years, and how things are funded has changed. One of the myths that a lot of nonprofits believe is that, well, I have a service. Yes, there are other organizations in my community performing the same service, but there's a lot of funding out here for all of us. And that may or may not necessarily be true, depending upon the type of nonprofit that you have and the services that you provide. There are some areas where services or funding for those services may be less than others. An example might be, over the past couple of years, I've seen a decline in funding for literacy initiatives for adults, for instance, whereas funders who fund literacy projects or programs, they may have shifted their focus from funding for adults to funding early education. And so they've had a priority shift in funding. So your nonprofit has to pay attention to those trends and do a really good job with research when you're trying to identify potential funding. Another myth that exists is that you don't need partners. There are a lot of nonprofits who operate in silos, and they may or may not partner very well with other organizations. Funders love to know that you have partnered with other organizations who are providing a commitment to your program, and they are also providing some sort of service or financial contribution to your program. That can be through in-kind or a cash match. But funders love to see that, and they're more likely to fund projects that have multiple partners. So it's in your best interest as a nonprofit entity to work with others and help provide comprehensive, holistic programs to your clients instead of a narrow niche.
Right.
So those are a couple of the myths that exist.
Right, and it's so important. Collaboration, collaboration, and collaboration is what I like to say, because the funders love to see collaboration. But also, one of the things that I like to say is that everybody wants to start a nonprofit. I believe that in order to be an effective and a successful nonprofit, that you ought to volunteer in a nonprofit before.
Yes.
Become a part of the board. Understand what the board does. Understand those rules, because a lot of times people that start nonprofits want to have their family and their friends on their board. I speak against that, because family and friends don't want to work. You need to get individuals that are going to bring something to the table, that has those connections, that has that database that you are able to tap in through your nonprofit organization, because guess what? Some of you may not even get any grants right away, but you still say you have a program to run. If the money's not there, how are you going to run your program? So it's a key important that you look at who's on your board, and that you collaborate, that you take the time to volunteer and to see the nuts and bolts of what happens with in a nonprofit organization, because it's hard work.
It is. And just to kind of speak about what you just mentioned, it's actually a red flag for funders if they ask you to submit a list of your board members. Again, remember I said as a grant reviewer, because I've done that as well, we have the ability, once we get that documentation, to go back and Google these individuals or look at their LinkedIn page, and we can see if there is a relationship between them and your organization. And so it could be what is called a potential conflict of interest, or look like collusion, perhaps, if you have individuals on your boards or working for your nonprofit that may have some sort of interest or financial gain or benefit from being there. So that can be a red flag to funders, and they do look for that type of stuff, and they ask you for a list of your board members. But as Tracy mentioned, you do want to make sure that you try to recruit a dynamic board that can not only contribute to your organization financially, but they have a network that they can tap into, who can either become donors or help you find funding or secure funding for you, for instance, if they work for a bank. Having those types of relationships can only strengthen your nonprofit.
Right. And then, like we said, it's important because your board is there to help guide you. Your board is there to make sure that you accomplish what you set out to do, that your vision and your mission statement actually come to life. So that's the importance of a board.
They hold
you accountable, because a lot of times we just get so excited that we just don't – the nuts and bolts of a nonprofit organization is essential. Your board is essential. Your funding is essential, because without those two critical pieces – and there's probably some more – but without those two pieces, you cannot provide an effective and efficient program to those that you want to serve. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Are we living in a dream world? Are your eyes still green, girl? I know you're sick and tired of arguing, but you can't keep it bottled in. Jealousy, we gotta swallow it. Your heart and mind, baby, follow it. Smile, happiness, you can model it. And when you feel opposite, I just want you to know, your whole being is beautiful. I'ma do the best I can do, 'cause I'm my best when I'm with you.
Welcome back to the show, and we are having such a good time with our guest today. She's just given us so many tools and so much information that I wanted to just ask you, so when you begin to work with your client, what phase or what part, how should it be? What's your ideal client? Now, we know that there's no ideal client, but we know that there's a point that when they come to you, they should already have what done?
So I actually get clients from those who are startups all the way to government entities. I work with a wide variety of different types of clients. I do not mind working with startup entities. The key is I tend to do more of the, I guess, coaching with them, one-on-one coaching, and I like to send my clients, especially startups, a list of how do you become grant ready. And so it's a checklist of documents and things that you need to apply for any grant application, whether it's federal, state, or foundation grant. And so I usually provide them with that checklist, and oftentimes the clients need months or even a year or two to actually get those documents in place and implement some of those things that are on the checklist, and they will give me a call back, which is what I want them to do. But I try to make sure that they're guided in the right direction by giving them that checklist up front. And then if they want to pursue meeting with me further, we tend to do one-on-one coaching where I can coach them through maybe one aspect, such as here's the documentation you need to apply for a federal grant. You're going to need your DUNS number. You're going to have to get registered on SAM, which is the Systems Award for Management. I can teach them that, walk them through that through coaching, and essentially they work with me in that manner. And then they get all of these things in place, and then they're ready to do grant research. And so they may contract with me to do the research for them, or they do it on their own, and they come back to me and say, hey, I have 3 grants that I want to apply for. I really don't have time to write these because I'm stretched thin. Can you write them? What is your fee? And so we go through that process as well.
Wow, and that's great. That's the best process, because that means that when they come to you, they are ready. And I know
that's
important to be ready, because, like I say, many organizations believe that they are grant ready. They're grant positioned, but they're not grant ready. They're in that position, but we got to get them to that point of getting them ready. So let's talk about some of the things in which will not get you funded, or some of the things, let's say we've gone through an audit, and what will have you paying the money back if you did not do it correctly, if it didn't happen. And I can use this one example that I remember, because when auditors come out, they not only look at your books, they physically go look at the item that you said that you purchased with that money. And we tended to purchase, it's a public safety organization, let's say it was something like a walkie-talkie or something, but we needed this piece to put in there. And it wasn't quite, the grantor was looking for one thing, and we kind of like did another thing. So we didn't have to pay the money back, but we really had to explain, like, no, this is what we meant when we were doing that. It was so scary, but then I've been in a position where we had to give some money back. But we had to give the money back because we didn't spend it. And that's never where a nonprofit wants to find this up at. You don't want to give your money back. You don't want to give your money back, because the funder, if it's a continuation grant, sometimes they look at that, well, hey, you said you needed $100,000, but you only spent $60,000. You really don't, and it's been for the last couple of years, so really all you need is $60,000 to do this program. So that's why they'll give you less happily, and they'll give you less, and they'll give it to some other organization that's, you know, right up there at tap. They're at $99,999. That's where they are. So some of the things that will get us in trouble with our grant money are what?
So essentially, as you mentioned, spending your funds. Funders look at how much you're spending on a monthly or a quarterly basis. You should be doing that, or your CFO or your finance person should be looking at how much you're spending on a monthly basis and be able to produce a report with all of your expenditures on how you're spending your funding. But funders definitely look at that. So if they see that it's taking you 6 months from the time that they gave you a check or approved your award, if you still have not started your program within 6 months, that's a red flag, even for a government grantee. They want to know why, and they're going to send you emails and certified letters asking you why, or they'll tell you they're going to come down for a site visit to try to find out why you haven't spent any money. So that's certainly a big one. You do not want to take more than, I would say, 3 months once you get a check to start spending. That's going to be a red flag. It's a whole quarter's worth of time. And so you want to make sure you start spending as soon as possible. Other things that can get money, I'd say, taken back or rescinded, you want to make sure that you adhere to the budget that was approved by your funder. For instance, if you say that you're going to purchase 4 iPads at X amount of dollars, you don't want to go purchase 4 laptops and then expect the funder to pay for that when they approved iPads and not laptops. So that's quite important, is to, again, do what you say you're going to do and do what it is that was approved by the funder. Don't deviate from the plan. It's okay if you do need deviations, but you need to ask them in writing and get approval from them in writing that it's okay for you to spend that money on something else than what was originally planned.
Right.
Other things that may have get you, I guess, slapped on the hand in a sense from funders. Making sure that you have your matching funds or your in-kind funds already available. A lot of people will say that they have cash matches available to leverage the grant funding. Well, when it comes time to take a look at your financial reports and your expenditures, you see, a funder will see that, hey, there's not this, they don't have an extra $25,000, or they're not spending extra money outside of the grant funds. So then they're going to start asking you questions and ask to see a copy of your general ledger or your accounting reports, and you have to furnish that to them. So if they see that you are not spending this cash that you said you had available, they can actually take their money back, because you told them you were going to match the grant and you don't have the funds to do it. Also, if you're getting a match from another partner, let's say you're a nonprofit and you're partnering with another nonprofit, like a soup kitchen, and they're going to give you a cash match of $5,000 or $10,000, and they wrote a commitment letter, and they said they were going to give you this money. And for whatever reason, when the project starts, they come back to you and say, we don't have it. It is better for you to address that head on and let the funder know up front, instead of starting to spend the money, and then 6 months into it, you still don't have a cash match, and then the funder asks you for additional documentation and you still don't have a cash match. These are all things that give them a reason to ask you to send the grant money back.
Right, right. I like to call it being a tattletale. If you don't have it, you need to tell them. And then if you don't have it, you need to let them know. But it's a key thing that you said. It's important that anytime you change anything within the grant, anything, that you do that budget modification and you get approval before you start spending anything, before you do any single thing. And you use this prime example of, you know, making sure that we get iPads instead of laptops. Anything that needs to go with that iPad, such as the software package, such as the monthly fee, you need to ask for all of that when you're doing your grant, because they're saying that you're just going to get I gave you an iPad. Now you say you need the software to load on the iPad. That wasn't part of the
grant
agreement. That wasn't right. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a part of that. So a lot of times those are some of the things that we need to think through. And the cash match that you talked about, a lot of times when you do your quarterly reports, you have to put that match in there. That time you have to spend. So I guess I want to ask you this key thing, because coming from the governmental side of doing grants, a lot of times when we worked on them, or when I worked on them, it was a reimbursement grant, which simply means that we spent our money up front and then we got our money back. So do you find that true? Because I don't want the nonprofits to say, okay, I'm going to get this $100,000 and I'm going to get it right then. A lot of times they want you to spend and then be reimbursed.
Correct. So if you seek funding from a local government, a state government, or the federal government, all of those grants are, I would say, 95%, maybe even 99% reimbursable. And so just as Tracy mentioned, yes, that means you have to spend your money up front So you need cash on hand, a line of credit, credit cards, whatever it is. You need to have some sort of funding available up front that you spend, and then you turn in your receipts along with a financial report, and then the funder reimburses you for what you spent. So that is definitely typically the case, almost always the case with government grants. I have found with foundations and other types of public charities, they more often than not tend to give you a check up front, and then you still have to turn in the same type of documentation, but they are more likely to give you funding up front versus a government entity. But there are a lot of foundations who also do a reimbursement grant.
Right. So I just think it's key that you be prepared to put some money out front, because if you're mm-hmm. saying that your grant's going to start on July the 1st or July to June or January to December or October 1st to September 30th, you need to be ready to at least take care of a first quarter. That's just my, you need to be able, because by that time, you know, let's say, for example, because you talked about making sure that you have that you're grant ready. Grant ready doesn't mean that you're hiring the person once you get the grant. It means that you pretty much know that, because a grantor will let you know that you receive these funds and you're going to start, they start July 1st or mm-hmm. October 1st. So that means that before that, you should be in the preparation phase of hiring somebody so that you won't be losing money during that quarter. You don't want to take a whole quarter to hire somebody, because Correct. Now you're a quarterback behind. And they're uh-huh. looking at, well, you didn't spend any money in the first quarter. Maybe you didn't get any equipment, but if you have a program manager that you need, then you need to make sure that you at least have that person there, because they're the ones that's going to manage the grant. They're the yeah. ones that's going to work with the finance people to make sure that you get what you need. They're the ones that's most likely going to be able to answer those quarterly questions, do that quarterly report, which consists of a narrative and a financial. So it's just so much involved in being a nonprofit organization, so much involved in making sure that you're grant ready. And our guest today has done a great job in telling us, you know, what it is that we need. But before we leave, because I always forget this, can you tell us how to get in contact with you?
Yes. So I can be reached via my website, which is www.aapple, C as in Charlie, G as in goat, F as in Frank, L as in Lima, so acgfl.org. From there, if you would like to, if you're on the homepage and you scroll to the bottom, you can sign up for future newsletters and blog alerts. I have some great blogs on there. The latest one I wrote was speaking to what foundation funders are looking for in terms of performance and impact. So there are a lot of good nuggets on that particular blog. In addition, those who sign up for the newsletter or to be notified in the future, you're going to get first access to my books for pre-sale, and then you can also contact me to set up an appointment on the page as well if you'd like to receive any coaching or you need some services for your nonprofits. Primarily, the services that we provide are strategic planning. We do proposal development, which encompasses research. We also do your grant and contract administration. So if you have a grant and you need someone to help manage it, if it's possible to do that, we can also be hired to do that. And then we also do project management as well. So those are the services that we provide to our clients. And so you can certainly reach me there.
So let me ask this, because you know, you work with people all over, not just in Florida. Okay,
I do.
All right. I had to put that out there because
yes, I work nationwide. I've even worked with some clients in Puerto Rico. I travel quite a bit myself, and then I have other associates that I work with, and they stay behind here in Florida. But I work with people in New York, Indiana, Colorado, Puerto Rico. I have done it all over the U.S., even out in Hawaii.
Wow. So can you tell us a little bit about your team that you have assembled?
Yes, so my team, I have a couple of associates with me. Most of them are in Florida. One is also out in Hawaii. But we are all certified contract and grant managers. Our backgrounds mostly have stemmed from working either in the private sector or for government entities. So we worked at the federal and the local government level and the state level. So we have that viewpoint from we're typically the ones giving out money to other nonprofit organizations. So my associates, all of them have had that same background. They're certified as well as grant and contract professionals. So I like to have a team that's pretty strong, that if I need to hand something off to them, they can run with it, and they've got the expertise to help a nonprofit client from beginning to end as well.
Wow, so that's great. So we know that if we can't get you, we have the next best thing to you, and that's your staff.
Yes.
So we're getting ready to wrap up. So I want to ask you to leave us with three tips when it comes to nonprofits, or when it comes to grant management. Whatever tips that you want to leave us with, three good tips.
I would say, number one, make sure that you are able to convey your impact to anyone that is not a recipient of your services. You want to make sure that you can tell your story. You want to make sure that you have documented a success story of some of your participants as well. Being able to convey how you're making an impact in people's lives translates on paper into funding, and that's very important. So I would say that that's the biggest tip. It's kind of like that elevator pitch. You want to make sure that you can pitch your services, your services to your clients, and make sure that you're telling a compelling story in how your organization is able to help the community. And funders, that's what they want to hear and see when they're reading something on paper. So I think that that's quite important. Number two, do not underestimate the value in professional development for you as an executive director, your staff, or the volunteers that you have helping out your organization. For instance, if you are fortunate to get grant funding, do not just give this grant to someone who has never, they don't even know the definition of a grant. You don't want to just give this work to someone who is not vested in making sure that that grant is managed properly. At the end of the day, it is someone else's money, and they have the right to take it back. So you want to make sure that the person who is handling this funding and managing that program, that they know what they're doing. So make sure that you invest in the proper training for them. And make sure that they like to learn and are open to seeking professional development for themselves as well as a part of your organization. And then number three, I would say just make sure that you spend the money in a timely manner. You never want to give it back. And make sure that it's being used for what you say you're going to use it for, and that you are spending it on the client.
Wow, that's some great advice, because one of the things you want, your story is so important. Your story is what gets you dollars, what gets you money from the grant or even from individual donors. They want to know your story. They want to buy into it. Not only do they want to know your story as an executive director, everyone on your board ought to be able to convey that same story. They ought to have that passion, that enthusiasm, that go-get-it attitude. They believe in your vision just like you do. And then she talked about personal development. Personal development is so important on so many levels. And for yourself, for your staff, for those that you even out there serving, it's important to have personal development. And the final thing, spend that money. You don't want to give it back, but make sure that you spend it in the right way. Today we had the pleasure of being here with Sharique Willis of Affinity Consulting Group. Affinity Consulting Group. And I am so excited. She gave you all of her contact information. It'll be listed below on the show page. So until next week, listening audience, be sure to just meet me right back here at the Brownstone.